Hey, welcome to Therapy Sessions, the podcast where we turn up the volume on mental health conversations. It's all powered by Happy Jack Entertainment, a pioneering entertainment company that uses music and media to champion mental health. Now, each episode features conscious conversations with guests who share their personal experiences with mental health challenges and the strategies they use to manage them. This podcast right here is your sanctuary for meaningful dialogues that inspire change. So join us for captivating interviews, eye-opening discussions, and a community that is committed to breaking stigmas and fostering a more inclusive world. What's up? I'm your host, Maxwell. So all you got to do is tune in to Therapy Sessions and be a part of the movement that's making mental health a conversation we can all be a part of.
If you're lucky, what you're passionate about is what you're naturally good at.
Heck yeah.
And Heck yeah. It just feels like a joy and a pleasure. I love what I do. So there is no 9 to 5.
Dr. Robbie Ludwig in the building. Let's go ahead and give a round of applause. Therapy Session Podcast. It's all powered by Happy Jack Entertainment. And to be able to talk to you, someone who I have quite literally seen on TV, that I wake up and, well, sometimes I even go to sleep when I'm watching like the true crime parts of your job. I'm at night, I'm seeing you there as well. So, I mean, it's psychotherapist, it's TV personality, an author. How would you describe yourself, Dr. Robbie?
Oh, God. I often say I have 3 jobs.
Okay.
Because it feels like I have 3 jobs. So I'm a psychotherapist, and I have a fairly big practice. I'm an author, and I do psychological commentary on TV, and I've hosted and produced my own podcast as well.
That was more than 3 jobs, wasn't it, guys? You are a busy person.
See, this is why I did not major in accounting. It's like, you know, not so good with numbers.
But now, before we started rolling here on the pod, we were talking a tad about how you found your calling pretty early. Like, you knew that this was in your heart. How did that fester for you? When did it begin?
So I remember in elementary school, I was walking. I think I was in 6th grade.
Okay.
And I was walking home with a friend, and I said, I'm going to be a therapist.
Really?
And I just knew. I was like, I just know I'm going to be a therapist. And my mother reminded me that from that point on, I thought I was.
Okay.
I didn't think I really needed training. Yeah. I was like, I'll analyze you and you.
You were helping since 6th grade.
I don't know how effective I was. This was like 2nd grade. I really just knew. And then after that, in high school, I knew I wanted to be an author.
Yeah.
And my uncle is a very kind of iconic weatherman in New York City, Mr. G.
Yeah.
So I was very influenced by his work and how he was able to express his passion. And I thought TV would be pretty cool, but in the psychology realm.
To know that, you know, at a young age, you were wanting to help. That you had that calling. How special is it? We were kind of mentioning the idea of the cliche saying, you know, when you love what you do, you're not working a day in your life. Like, how special is it to be able to find that and to have that be something that you knew?
I know. I feel like once you find your passion, it really is the centerpiece for your life. And if you're lucky, what you're passionate about is what you're naturally good at.
Heck yeah.
And it just feels like a joy and a pleasure. I love what I do. So there is no 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
There's whatever hour it happens to be.
But sometimes we got to make sure that you get your sleep. I don't want to be calling you asking for help at like 2:30 in the morning. Well, that's just rude.
You know, therapists in training learn boundaries.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can't do therapy effectively 24/7, right? You're not meant to be available 24/7. If somebody needs that from you, you need to analyze it and say, what's going on?
Wow.
So we learn those boundaries because it's essential to keeping the treatment workable.
And effective, and to be your best self for somebody else.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
If somebody is sucking you in, then you're probably a young therapist who's being manipulated by the patient.
Mm.
And so I think every young therapist has moments like that.
My gosh.
Or attracting friends that are really troubled is like your unofficial patients,
for sure.
You know, in your personal life. And then you really learn. You learn how to use your body and your mind as an instrument to help the process.
What does it do for your heart? How
How special must you feel knowing that you are able to assist others in being their best selves?
I always say that it's not me just doing the work. Mm-hmm. Really, somebody has to show up and want to do the work with me. Okay. It's a collaboration. And what I have found is when you are a therapist long enough, you end up attracting and keeping the patients you're meant to work with.
Got it.
And so I really enjoy all the patients that I work with. And so what's really a pleasure to see, and I feel really blessed to see people start from one place, in a place of pain or struggle, and then you see their lives flourish. And to be a part of that process, it's not just me. It's bigger than me.
Yeah.
But I'm a conduit.
We've been having that conversation with this therapy session podcast with several people, that realization of it's bigger than you.
Yeah.
Talking to musicians who truly realize that they're creating music that's bigger than them. Having an opportunity to sit down with Kenneth freaking Cole and have him be one of the biggest designers, you know, in fashion houses on the planet, and know that it's bigger than him, the reason why he's doing that. When did you come to that realization that it was bigger than you, and how did that make your practice and make what you continue to do even that much more special or stronger?
I never really thought about it until I was actually doing the work as a therapist. And I would almost feel like a channel.
Okay.
Like, some things would come through me, and I'd be like, where did that come from? Like, I'm not sure that came just from me.
Yeah.
And so it was this realization that, you know, I was working with a lot of different channels and factors. And listen, we don't always get it right. It's the human experience, and it's a process. But I think if you stay true to, you know, part of the therapy that I use is making what's unconscious conscious.
Bringing it to life.
Because there are things that we're not aware of that really drives our choices.
Wow.
And if we remain unconscious about it, it can be damaging for us. We don't know why we're drawn to certain things or making certain choices.
Yeah.
And so that is the beauty of the therapy, that a person gets to understand themselves better. And who's more fascinating to learn about than yourself?
Yourself. Oh, when that light bulb goes off,
it's
just like that feeling like, oh, now I get it. Now I can be a better version of myself to help others as well. Holy cow. As we think about, you know, therapy and you know, maybe a little bit of the stigma, we'll get into that in a few, but people having reservations, you know, wanting to seek help or have these conversations. What are some of the ways that you suggest, or you can maybe help people get over that staying closed in and actually seeking a little bit of help to, you know, to open those doors, to peel back those layers of the onion?
Well, there are certain cultural components where there's a lot of shame.
Yeah.
And families feel like if their child or their spouse, or if they go into treatment, they're shaming their families by not being perfect.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one, because there's a sense of family loyalty. Mm-hmm. And so we see that in multiple cultures. But I think the more we talk about it.
For sure.
And make it a norm. Like in New York City, it's kind of like having a personal trainer.
Yeah,
if you can get a therapist, it's like having a personal trainer. And, you know, I once heard someone say it like this, like the Jewish community really embraced therapy because Freud invented it. He was Jewish. It just felt like a natural, rite of passage. Like having your bar bat mitzvah. It's like, and then you do therapy.
Yeah.
Like it just felt normal.
It just felt normal.
So I think the more we talk about it, and I do think that people are more willing to talk about things that never got discussed.
And would you say that that part is maybe like a little bit a recent history type of a thing? Like, I mean, how would you say the progression? Because I feel like just recently it has been a lot, you know, more destigmatized, if that's the right way to communicate. So to watch that change start to happen, how excited are you for us as a species, as a human species, to be able to actually grow to be better.
It's really incredible. And sometimes there's this false notion that you need to do everything on your own and you need to fix it on your own and you need to show up for yourself on your own. And when you think about it, the way we are designed as human beings is we are dependent on others
a
for
community.
Our well-being.
Yes.
I mean, think about when you're a baby, you need that mother or caretaker in order to survive. And I think it's no different with our psyche.
Yeah.
And when we learn that someone can help us clarify things, it's almost like before therapy, there's the struggle. And usually people enter into therapy because they're in pain.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to fix the pain. Or somebody else sees them in pain and says, you might want to try this as an option. And it's like the road that you need to go, the choices that you might want to make, there's a clarification.
Yeah.
It's like having a foggy road in front of you versus a road on a sunny day.
Like this. Thank you, New York, for showing up today.
Yeah.
Love it.
So we all know those days. The foggy day, you can't see, like, you know, in front of you at all, and it's a bad hair day. And then it's...
I don't even know about that part, though. I'm just going to... Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Story of my life. Or, like, a clear, beautiful day. And the choice is, like, life is painful enough.
Yeah.
There are things that are beyond our control.
For sure.
And then I guess it's our job to find out how to find meaning in those things. But we don't need to make life tough by making self-defeating or self-destructive choices.
Yeah.
And so I see therapy as a way to highlight, hey, what might be in my best interest?
I love that. I mean, again, that just goes back to what you realize in the second grade, sixth grade, you started helping. Just it's for others. It's bigger than you.
Yeah.
Robbie, how are you feeling? Where's your heart health at? I like to ask this question.
Yeah. I'm going to knock wood on that because, you know, you don't want to tempt the gods. But I think there's really something. I heard this quote by Maya Angelou via Oprah. And this is true for Gloria Steinem, too. I'm in my 50s, and it's just such a wonderful time because it's everything that you've worked for.
You see
in alignment, and you feel like you finally know yourself, the good, the bad, the ugly, and you accept it for the most part. And it's just you're giving back. It's like you're using all of your training and all the things that you envisioned.
For sure.
You've created some of that. And it's you have friends for a life. I've had friends for a lifetime. That gives me pleasure.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love what I do.
Yeah.
And I keep my family close as my grounding. You
love
know,
that.
They're never
love
so
that.
Impressed with me, but you know, that's probably good too. And you know, I consider that a bit
it's
of
full.
Luck.
Ah, well, is it watch this segue. Is your best age now?
I feel that way.
Hey.
I do.
We got to talk about the book and about finding that heart happiness. And what actually, let's just go with what drew you to write this this book.
It was based on my own personal experience. Yeah. I was interviewed, and I think this is illegal, but somebody asked me anyway. They asked me how old I was when interviewing me for some kind of pilot.
Just something. Yeah.
And I remember saying my age, because I never lie about my age, because I've earned all those years.
For sure.
Each year I learned something valuable. And I remember walking away and saying, I wonder if I aged out of this job. Mm. And I was like, that's not me. And I thought about all the misconceptions out there about midlife and what it means to people and the books that were out there.
Yeah.
They were kind of devaluing in a funny way over the hill.
Yeah.
And it wasn't what I was seeing in New York City where I live.
Gotcha.
I was seeing women and men, for that matter, looking better than they ever have.
Yeah.
And I decided to dig deep and look at the research, and I found that in many ways, we're still learning, we're still growing. We see the glass half full.
Yeah.
We find our purpose and meaning in life, and many people feel like more confident now in midlife than they ever did before. And I wanted to make people aware of that.
For sure.
That there was something to look forward to instead of fearing.
We shouldn't fear
aging. Each stage has something to offer, but we live in a culture that idolizes youth, even though it can be a painful place to be.
Yeah.
And saying if it doesn't happen then, it won't happen.
It won't
happen. That's just not true.
It's very false. You know, our best years are still ahead of us. To anybody who's watching the pod or listening now and maybe in their 20s or 30s thinking that like, oh, you know, I've got to hurry up and do it. That's not really the case. What are some maybe like some actionable items that someone who is, let's say like 25, who thinks that, you know, I got to hurry up and do it now, that might not be the truth? Or what are some things that they can do to help just become a better version of themselves, or just to be a little bit more optimistic, I guess?
Well, you know, the 20s are a tough time
because
there's a lot of fear about the future. But at the same time, the future is where all of your hopes and dreams exist still.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I think it's really important to think through what are the big markers or milestones in your life that you want to create. And to start planting those seeds. But there is something about the power of slow that we don't think about in this speedy culture. And I love running around.
For sure. I mean, it's what we live here in New York City.
I like to run around like the rest of them. But, you know, when you slow down and give yourself time to get good at what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that takes time. It doesn't happen quickly.
I know.
To surround yourself with people that support you and who are also doing great things, because we really are like the people that we choose to be around.
For sure.
We'll be smarter if we hang out with smarter people, probably more creative if we hang out with creative types.
People. Yeah.
And, you know, give yourself permission to get the help when you need it to co-create. Have role models in your mind.
Who are some of those people for you? Who are the family and friends that you want to shout out? Shout out time with Dr. Robbie.
I'm lucky that I have a great family.
Yeah.
You know, my mother and uncle and, of course, my father. But they were big support systems for me. And my husband really helped me figure out how to get from therapy to TV. Because I was like, I'm going to be on TV.
But
and
how?
I was just walking around shopping, and he's like...
Like, what are you doing to get there?
He's like, and he made a face, and I was like, why are you making that face? He's like, because you're not doing anything about it. And I was like, okay, that's a good point. I'm not... He's like, if I ran around saying I'm going to be a baseball player... Yeah.
You got to go to practice.
And I was like, that's a good point, because I had magical thinking.
Yeah.
I thought because I wanted it, it would just automatically happen.
It would automatically happen.
And I took a course at NYU, which gave me kind of a really deep dive look into everything in the TV world, behind the scenes. And, you know, so I remember a speaker coming in and saying, don't wait to get good at something. Just start.
Yeah.
And as you go along, you'll develop your skills.
Yeah. Your path is going to happen the way it's meant to happen. But it's just... start walking down that path.
And I love this phrase. Gail Sheehy kind of coined it, or it's the first time I heard it. You're going to fail, but fail up.
Yes, there you go.
Fail so it works to your advantage.
Heck yeah.
And gets you to the next place.
You've been listening to Therapy Sessions, powered by Happy Jack Entertainment. Make sure you're subscribing to our podcast to be alerted when our next episode drops and when we continue the conversation. Speaking of conversation, if you like what you've heard and want to help us grow, all you got to do is leave a review. And if you feel like you want to take action and join the movement, well, just make sure to tag us at Happy Jack Entertainment on Instagram and hashtag Therapy Sessions Pod so we can join in as well.